Chapter 22. Oh, well, it does not much matter, apostrophe said Ethelberta, kissing Piketty soothingly. You ought not, of course, to have come to London in such a manner, but, since you have come, we will make the best of it. Perhaps it may end happily for you and for him. Who knows? Apostrophe, then don't you want him, Berta? Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh no, not at all. Apostrophe, apostrophe, what, and don't you really want him, Berta? Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Piketty, starting up. I would much rather he paid his addresses to you. He is not the sort of man I should wish to think it best to marry, even if I were to marry, which I have no intention of doing at present. He calls to see me, because we are old friends, but his calls do not mean anything more than that he takes an interest in me. It is not at all likely that I shall see him again. And I certainly never shall see him, unless you are present. Apostrophe, apostrophe, that will be very nice. Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. And you will be always distant towards him, and go to leave the room when he comes, when I will call you back. But suppose we continue this tomorrow? I can tell you better than what to do. Apostrophe, when Piketty had left her the second time, Ethelberta turned over upon her breast, and shook in convulsive sobs which had little relationship with tears. This abandonment ended as suddenly as it had begun, not lasting more than a minute and a half altogether, and she got up in an unconsidered and unusual impulse, to seek relief from the stinging sarcasm of this event, the unhappy love of Piketty, by mentioning something of it to another member of the family, her eldest sister Gwendoline, who was a woman full of sympathy. Ethelberta descended to the kitchen, it being now about 10 o'clock. The room was empty, Gwendoline not having yet returned, and Cornelia, being busy about her own affairs upstairs. The French family had gone to the theater, and the house on that account was very quiet tonight. Ethelberta sat down in the dismal place without turning up the gas, and in a few minutes admitted Gwendoline. The round-faced country cook floundered in, untying her bonnet as she came, laying it down on a chair, and talking at the same time. Such a place as this London is, to be sure. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she exclaimed, turning on the gas till it whistled. I wish I was down in Wessex again. Lord a mercy, Berta, I didn't see it was you. I thought it was Cornelia. As I was saying, I thought that, after biding in this underground cellar all the week, making up messes for them French folk, and never pleasing them, and never shall, because I don't understand that line, I thought I would go out and see Father, you know. Apostrophe, apostrophe, is he very well? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Ethelberta. Yes, and he is going to call round when he has time. Well, as I was a-coming home along I thought, please the Lord I'll have some chipples for supper just for a plain trait, and I went round to the late greengrocer's for 'em, and do you know they sweared me down, that they hadn't got such things as chipples in the shop, and had never heard of 'em in their lives. At last I said, why, how can you tell me such a brazen story? Here they be, heaps of 'em. It made me so vexed, that I came away there and then, and wouldn't have one, no, not at a gift. Apostrophe, apostrophe, they call them young onions here, apostrophe, said Ethelberta quietly, you must always remember that. But, Gwendoline, I wanted apostrophe, Ethelberta felt sick at heart, and stopped. As he had come down on the wings of an impulse, to unfold her trouble about Piketty to her hard-headed and much older sister, less for advice than to get some heart ease by interchange of words. But alas, she could proceed no further. The wretched homeliness of Gwendoline's mind seemed at this particular juncture to be absolutely intolerable, and Ethelberta was suddenly convinced that to involve Gwendoline in any such discussion would simply be increasing her own burden, and adding worse confusion to her sister's already confused existence. What were you going to say? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the honest and unsuspecting Gwendoline. I will put it off until tomorrow, apostrophe, Ethelberta murmured gloomily, I have a bad headache, and I am afraid I cannot stay with you after all. ... As she ascended the stairs, Ethelberta ached with an added pain not much less than the primary one which had brought her down. It was that old sense of disloyalty to her class and kin, by feeling as she felt now, which caused the pain, and there was no escaping it. Gwendoline would have gone to the ends of the earth for her. She could not confide a thought to Gwendoline. If she only knew of that unworthy feeling of mine, how she would grieve, said Ethelberta miserably. She next went up to the servants' bedrooms, and to where Cornelia slept. On Ethelberta's entrance, Cornelia looked up from a perfect wonder of a bonnet, which she held in her hands. At sight of Ethelberta, the look of keen interest in her work changed to one of gaiety. I am so glad I was just coming down, Cornelia said in a whisper. Whenever they spoke as relations in this house, it was in whispers. Now, how do you think this bonnet will do? May I come down, and see how I look in your big glass? She clapped the bonnet upon her head. Won't it do beautiful for Sunday afternoon? It looks very attractive, as far as I can see by this light, said Ethelberta. But is it not rather too brilliant in color blue and red together, like that? Remember, as I often tell you, people in town never wear such bright contrasts as they do in the country. Said Cornelia, in a deprecating tone. Don't object. If there's one thing I do glory in, it is a nice flare-up about my head. Oh, Sundays, of course, if the family's not in mourning, I mean. But, seeing that Ethelberta did not smile, she turned the subject, and added docilely. Did you come up for me to do anything? I will put off finishing my bonnet, if I am wanted. I was going to talk to you about family matters, and pick a tea, said Ethelberta. But, as you are busy, and I have a headache, I will put it off till tomorrow. Cornelia seemed decidedly relieved, for family matters were far from attractive at the best of times, and Ethelberta went down to the next floor, and entered her mother's room. After a short conversation, Mrs. Chickerell said, "You say you want to ask me something?" Yes. But nothing of importance, Mother. I was thinking about Piketty, and what would be the best thing to do. Well, you may, Berta. I am so uneasy about this life you have led us into, and full of fear that your plans may break down. If they do, whatever will become of us? I know you are doing your best, but I cannot help thinking that the coming to London and living with you was wild and rash, and not well weighed afore we set about it. You should have counted the cost first, and not advised it. If you break down, and we are all discovered living, so queer and unnatural, right in the heart of the aristocracy, we should be the laughing stock of the country. It would kill me, and ruin us all, utterly ruin us. Oh, Mother, I know all that so well. Exclaimed Ethelberta, tears of anguish filling her eyes. Don't depress me more than I depress myself by such fears, or you will bring about the very thing we strive to avoid. My only chance is in keeping in good spirits, and why don't you try to help me a little, by taking a brighter view of things? I know I ought to, my dear girl, but I cannot. I do so wish that I never let you tempt me and the children away from the lodge. I cannot think why I allowed myself to be so persuaded, cannot think. You are not to blame, it as one. I am much older than you, and ought to have known better than listen to such a scheme. This undertaking seems too big, the bills frighten me. I have never been used to such wild adventure, and I can't sleep at night for fear that your tale-telling will go wrong, and we shall all be exposed and shamed. A storyteller seems such an impossible castle in the air sort of a trade for getting a living by. I cannot think however you came to dream of such an unheard of thing. But it is not a castle in the air, and it does get a living. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Ethelberta, her lip quivering. Well, yes, while it is just a new thing, but I am afraid it cannot last, that's what I fear. People will find you out as one of a family of servants, and their pride will be stung at having gone to hear your romancing. Then they will go no more, and what will happen to us, and the poor little ones? Apostrophe, apostrophe, we must all scatter again. Apostrophe, apostrophe, if we could get as we were once, I wouldn't mind that. But we shall have lost our character as simple country folk who know nothing, which are the only class of poor people that squires will give any help to, and I much doubt if the girls would get places after such a discovery, it would be so awkward and unheard of. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, all I can say is, apostrophe, replied Ethelberta, that I will do my best. All that I have is theirs and yours as much as mine, and these arrangements are simply on their account. I don't like my relations being my servants, but if they did not work for me, they would have to work for others, and my service is much lighter and pleasanter than any other lady's would be for them, so the advantages are worth the risk. If I stood alone, I would go and hide my head in any hole and care no more about the world and its ways. I wish I was well out of it, and at the bottom of a quiet grave anybody might have the world for me then. But don't let me disturb you longer, it is getting late. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Ethelberta then wished her mother good night, and went away. To attempt confidences on such an ethereal matter as love was now absurd. Her hermit spirit was doomed to dwell apart as usual, and she applied herself to deep thinking without aid and alone. Not only was there Picotee's misery to disperse, it became imperative to consider how best to overpass a more general catastrophe. 24. Ethelberta's house, continued the British Museum, Mrs. Chickerell, in deploring the risks of their present speculative mode of life, was far from imagining that signs of the foul future, so much dreaded, were actually apparent to Ethelberta at the time the lament was spoken. Hence the daughter's uncommon sensitiveness to prophecy. It was as if a dead reckoner poring over his chart should predict breakers ahead to one who already beheld them. That her storytelling would prove so attractive, Ethelberta had not ventured to expect for a moment, that having once proved attractive there should be any falling off until such time had elapsed as would enable her to harvest some solid fruit, was equally a surprise. Future expectations are often based without hesitation upon one happy accident, when the only similar condition remaining to subsequent sets of circumstances is that the same person forms the center of them. Her situation was so peculiar, and so unlike that of most public people, that there was hardly an argument explaining this triumphant opening which could be used in forecasting the close. Unless, indeed, more strategy were employed in the conduct of the campaign than Ethelberta seemed to show at present. There was no denying that she commanded less attention than at first. The audience had lessened, and, judging by appearances, might soon be expected to be decidedly thin. In excessive lowness of spirit, Ethelberta translated these signs with the bias that a lingering echo of her mother's dismal words naturally induced, reading them as conclusive evidence that her adventure had been chimerical in its birth. Yet it was very far less conclusive than she supposed. Public interest might without doubt have been renewed after a due interval, some of the falling off being only an accident of the season. Her novelties had been hailed with pleasure, the rather that their freshness tickled than that their intrinsic merit was appreciated. And, like many inexperienced dispensers of a unique charm, Ethelberta, by bestowing too liberally and too frequently, was destroying the very element upon which its popularity depended. Her entertainment had been good in its conception, and partly good in its execution. Yet her success had but little to do with that goodness. Indeed, what might be called its badness in a histrionic sense, that is, her look sometimes of being out of place, the sight of a beautiful woman on a platform, revealing tender airs of domesticity which showed her to belong by character to a quiet drawing room, had been primarily an attractive feature. But alas, custom was staling this, by improving her up to the mark of an utter impersonator, thereby eradicating the pretty abashments of a poetess out of her sphere. And more than one well-wisher who observed Ethelberta from afar feared that it might someday come to be said of her that she had enfoffed herself to popularity. That, being daily swallowed by men's eyes, they surfeited with honey, and began to loathe the taste of sweetness, whereof a little more than a little is by much too much. ... But this in its extremity was not quite yet. We discover her one day, a little after this time, sitting before a table strewed with accounts and bills from different tradesmen of the neighborhood, which she examined with a pale face, collecting their totals on a blank sheet. Piketty came into the room, but Ethelberta took no notice whatever of her. The younger sister, who subsisted on scraps of notice and favor, like a dependent animal, even if these were only an occasional glance of the eye, could not help saying at last, "Berta, how silent you are. I don't think you know I am in the room." ... I did not observe you, ... said Ethelberta. I am very much engaged. These bills have to be paid. ... What, and cannot we pay them? ... said Piketty, in vague alarm. Oh yes, I can pay them. The question is, how long shall I be able to do it? ... That is sad. And we are going on so nicely too. It is not true that you have really decided to leave off storytelling now the people don't crowd to hear it as they did? ... I think I shall leave off. ... And begin again next year? ... That is very doubtful. ... I'll tell you what you might do, said Piketty, her face kindling with a sense of great originality. You might travel about to country towns and tell your story splendidly. ... A man in my position might perhaps do it with impunity, but I could not without losing ground in other domains. A woman may drive to Mayfair from her house in Exonbury Crescent, and speak from a platform there, and be supposed to do it as an original way of amusing herself. But when it comes to starring in the provinces, she establishes herself as a woman of a different breed and habit. I wish I were a man. I would give up this house, advertise it to be let furnished, and sally forth with confidence. But I am driven to... Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.